This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, coming up this hour, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. You don't want to miss that. And also, Patrick Stevens is going to join us from the Washington Post. We're going to talk some college football. We've got a big game coming up this week, a couple of big games coming up this weekend. So we'll break that down for you. Also, later on this week, and it starts on Friday, I've said it many times, I'm going to say it again, the Ryder Cup. One of the more exciting sporting events, even if you don't love golf, there's a level of atmosphere in this thing that transcends the sport. It goes beyond just the regular old golf match you may see, like at the Masters or the U.S. Open. There is a lot of pride on the line. But it's so bizarre that you look at the rosters of these two teams, the European team and the U.S. team. It almost feels like every single time we do the Ryder Cup, we haven't had one in 3 years, we look at it and go, wow, the United States is stacked. And then they lose. Not only they lose, like when they went to France, they got bombed. They lost 17.5 to 10.5. And so the United States has not played particularly well in this over the last few Ryder Cups. But I still look forward to it every year because I think whenever you can take a sport and transform it into something even a little bit larger than what its sport the sport is, then I think it's pretty special. You know, we don't get to see this a lot in other sports, right? We watch the Super Bowl, and that's supposed to be the top part of the football. But how many times do you go, well, it settled into a football game, right? That's what happens. All the pomp and circumstance. But in the end, when the ball is kicked off, it settles into a football game. It's the same thing with the World Series. There's energy, excitement. The stadium is loud. But in the end, it is a baseball game. It is the same level. It may not be the same energy and anticipation, but it's the same game. Golf, in this way, in the way the Ryder Cup is different. The game is transformed. It's match play. It's alternate shot. It's best ball. It's singles matches where guys, this is not something they do on a regular basis. And it isn't for money. It isn't for points, for FedEx Cup points. It isn't for any individual honor. It is to win as a team. At first time, a lot of these guys will do that on the professional level. I'm telling you, if you have never seen it, watch it. There's patriotic music. I mean, NBC kind of goes all out with it. I hope to see the Americans win, but I know the last couple ones have really not gone their way. So the Ryder Cup's coming up later this week. Good, the bad, and the dumb next as we roll along in hour number two. And don't forget, Patrick Stevens from the Washington Post talks some college football as we continue on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Good, the bad, and the dumb Tuesday edition. After Monday Night Football, who knows what's on the list? Let's get to the good of the day. What is it, Mr. Culver?
The good of the day, I got to go to your South Carolina head football coach, Shane Beamer.
Shane Beamer.
Yes. He was asked the other day what George's defensive line was doing to make things difficult for his offense.
Yeah, this is great.
Here's his answer.
Georgia's a defensive line. What were they doing to maybe make things difficult on the offense?
They've got like 105 star football players on their defense. They have a defensive lineman that weighs 340 pounds and runs better than everybody on this call. They've got five-star defensive backs. They're big and physical and fast. I mean, other than that, they're really freaking good. That's why they have the top defense in the country. They're hard to run the football on. So there wasn't some magical scheme they came out with tonight. They got five-star recruits everywhere, and they play really physical. Damn.
Yeah, that makes me kind of depressed, too.
Yeah.
It's like if Shane Beamer, if you don't get those kind of players, you're never going to win.
Right. There's still hope, but
it's very honest, again, and it's wonderful.
I know that you say this time and time and time again, that reporters ask a question that everyone knows the answer to, but you ask it just to get the soundbite.
Just to get the soundbite.
And this is one of those questions where, you know, yeah, you're asking a head football coach, like, why is the number two defense and the number one defense, why did they give you trouble tonight? You know, you kind of know that answer.
Right. He delivers it kind of perfectly. Yeah, and it's finally just, you know, I don't know if coaches are reluctant to say another team is better, right? There's something.
A lot of times,
like,
yeah.
Like, a lot of times they're like, they just don't want to, you know, because, you know, they answer, we joke about it all the time. They answer to, you know, they got these sponsors and these big donors and everybody, you know, coach, what do you think we're going to do? Win 10 games this year? What do you think? 10, 11? And you're like, yeah, we're going to win 4. All right, what are you talking about? Do you even pay attention to this?
Yeah.
You know, like they never, you know, they go, ah, well, you know, we're going to give it a good college try. Ha ha.
Yep.
And Shane Beamer's like, yeah, they're better than we are. Like, what do you want me to say? Like,
this is like, my favorite was like, they've got a five-star defensive lineman who weighs 340 some odd pounds and runs faster than any of you guys right now.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And that's so bold and it's great. I think it's great. It's very refreshing. Very refreshing. I was just thinking that word. Really refreshing. Well played. I'm already starting to like this guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? And who knows? You don't know what the future holds. Maybe South Carolina starts to build a little something happening here, you know, and somewhere down the road, you get one five-star recruit. Maybe you get two. Maybe you get three. And, you know, all of a sudden you got something.
When I was in Charleston, I was in Charleston for 1 year, and we had a relationship with a guy that ran some like Gamecock website, which was just a fan website, right? A lot of recruiting, a lot of stuff like that. And so when we were doing our preview, the management said, you should get this guy on to preview the Gamecocks this year. So I said, okay. And I would go through the season with him, and he had, now this was a Spurrier kind of rebuilding year, right? They didn't have a quarterback and they lost some key players, and he had them winning 11 games. And it was only because he was wearing these goggles that prevented him from really seeing what the team really was. He didn't really do the preview justice because he came in so blinded by the idea that South Carolina, you could take that story and multiply it 100 times across the country. So when a coach deviates from those people, right, it's rare. It's rare that happens. And I'm glad he said that. He should have said that. He should have said, look, guys, you know why we lost? They're way better than we are. And he doesn't have to take the fault for it, because he's like, I didn't spend the last 5 years recruiting here. So good for him. I like that. What's the bad of the day?
This is a continuation of a story we did, God, maybe a year and a half ago, almost 2 years now.
Okay.
Brazilian soccer star Hulk. Remember we talked about Hulk?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, Hulk, I remember him.
And that is his name. I think we had a conversation about that too, that, you know, is his name really Hulk? And I'm like, right. Yes. His name is really Hulk.
Is it Robert Hulkenstein?
No, just simply Hulk.
Okay, Hulk.
I'm sure, you know, Brazilians all have, like, you know, 50 names, but he just goes by Hulk, as much as, like, Pele goes by Pele.
Right.
Anyways, when we talked about him, like, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, he had left his wife and started dating his wife's niece.
Oh, yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Well, just the other day... The happy couple announced that they are pregnant.
Of course they did.
With Hulk's, it'll be Hulk's fourth child, her first, obviously.
Wonderful.
Now, he does have three other kids with his previous wife, which happens to be his new wife's aunt. So. Ugh,
this is going to be so weird.
This is where the bad comes in, because I'm really trying to figure this out. So his current kids are cousins to his current wife or girlfriend. I don't know if they're married.
Right.
So they're cousins, first cousins, right? Because that's
got it.
That's how it works, yeah?
I'm asking
for your help here.
I'm trying to follow along.
It's their mother's niece, so that makes them first cousins.
Right, you're right, first cousins, right.
So what does that make the baby?
Is he excited about this?
I think he's, I don't know.
Is he thrilled about this change, like this weird family dynamic he suddenly created?
Obviously, he loves the women in this family, because all he did was change the old one in for a newer model.
Maybe like there's like maybe the niece, but maybe there's so much alike. He's like, why stay with the older version when the younger version will be just fine?
Hey, it's why you trade in your iPhone, right?
Right, exactly. I'm getting a newer version of kind of the same thing.
Yep, they upgraded the camera.
Yeah, like it's one thing when you leave your wife for the nanny. The nanny is probably nothing like the wife you're leaving, like when celebrities do this.
Different gene pool.
By the way, if you're married to a famous actor or singer, do not allow him to hire a hot 22-year-old nanny. It doesn't seem to work out like you think it is. Like you think, oh, she's good with the kids. It wasn't the resume. Trust me, it
all
doesn't end
sudden,
very well.
The husband is coming home early.
That's right.
And I got off work early, so I decided to come home. I let the nanny stay.
All right, and before you know it, Joe Piscopo is on national TV singing a song to his nanny, who he just fell in love with.
Yeah.
Right? You never do that. But in this case, it wasn't that.
No.
It was just like family reunion. Hey, honey, this is my niece. Hello, niece. And then it went that way.
Yeah.
You think everybody in the family's cool with this?
I can't imagine that, right?
What happens at the next family reunion?
I mean, I guess, you know, what happens at the, you know, they each get invited to another cousin's wedding.
Right. Hey Hulk, this is my cousin. Hello, cousin.
Yeah.
He just keeps chugging right down the family line. Oh, good old Hulk.
And then his ex-wife and the ex-wife's niece, which would then be his ex-wife again or girlfriend, you know, now they have a bond, a shared bond, and then you can go and have a fifth child with a third cousin twice removed, or I don't know how it works.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah, you know what? I'm surprised. If it's not already a reality show in Brazil, what are they doing?
What are they doing?
Because that would
right?
be a
Jump
reality
in.
Show in America in like 2 seconds.
In 2 seconds? Are you kidding me? Before they even had the baby, they would have been drawing an outline for how this is going to go. Right? Oh, my goodness. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is the PC Warriors are at again. Disney is giving Jessica Rabbit a PC makeover.
I know. I saw this. What are they doing?
So, basically, I don't know if Disney World has the Roger Rabbit ride. It's like a cartoon or car spin ride. They have it at Disneyland. It's in Toontown.
Yeah.
And so the first step was is that they removed her. They removed the damsel in distress from the trunk of a car and replaced it with barrels of what was it, turpentine or the mix?
The stuff that kills the
cartoons. So they put barrels in the trunk of the taxi cab, the Weasels did, rather than Jessica Rabbit, who was tied up. And they're just giving her, going to give her a complete makeover, not make her such a sex symbol.
Are they putting more clothes on her? Is that what they're basically
doing? Some of the talk, is maybe putting a trench coat on her. I don't know.
God.
Listen, if you wanted to switch Pirates of the Caribbean and have some of the women chase the men around, that's fine. But now, now you're just messing with a cartoon character.
Yeah, I kind of got the Pirates of the Caribbean thing because they were auctioning off women.
Well, they still have that.
No, they don't. They got rid of that.
Well, the one in Disneyland still has it.
I don't know about that. Look into that, because they changed it because they took the old ride had "We want the redhead." The redhead is now a pirate, and she's
auctioning
off the. Look it up because they made a big deal about this.
Yeah, but the one at Disneyland is "Give us the ready," and she is she's second in line, and they're not.
That's the old. That's the old ride.
New,
they rechanged it.
When?
I have to look it up.
Last couple of years. Okay, because the last couple of years. I was there. I was at Disneyland like probably 2 years ago, two summers ago, and they still
had. They might have just changed it. Trust me, they changed it.
I don't want to hear that.
You'll have to trust me because this was their big PC move. Like they were auctioning women. They captured women on the island and auctioning them off as wives. And they said, we're getting rid of this. And they still kept, we want the redhead, but the redhead is now a pirate and she's got the loot. She's got cash and prizes for the pirates rather than females that have been captured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they were skipping over the not so pleasant looking one. I'm using PC to get to the redhead. That's how I always saw it.
Yeah. All but right, yeah, so Jessica Rabbit's getting some clothes. Is that what they're saying?
She's getting some clothes. She's getting a makeover. You're going to put her in a tracksuit, right?
Sad.
I don't know.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Jessica Rabbit is a fantastically drawn cartoon.
Some say the best.
Some say the best. Exactly. All right. We got Patrick Stevens coming up. We'll talk some college football, the games that are in the books and the games that are coming up Saturday. That's coming up later on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com. Pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to your curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Michael on Twitter. Hulk's infidelity is very common in Brazil. You should hear the stories my wife tells me of her ex-husband. One time, a 10-year-old girl approached my stepdaughter in school and told her, "I'm your sister." My wife said the household got very interesting. Oh, okay. So is that a thing they do in Brazil?
I guess sounds like it.
Sounds. I'll take your word for it.
Sounds like a fun place to visit now.
I don't know. I know this in my family. If you married a girl and then married her niece, it would be really, really awkward. It would probably be a lot of gossip and a lot of behind the back talking about you as an individual. I'm just saying. I think it's kind of tough.
I mean, I guess, do you just hang out with his family at this point?
Yeah, exactly. Do you just?
Because they're like, whatever.
Right.
Here's our proud son because he plays for the Brazilian national team.
Right.
Because that definitely carries a whole lot of different weight.
I was just going to say, he is a very, very famous celebrity.
Yes.
So if he's coming to your family reunion because somebody in the family married into him, I'm sure a lot of the sins go away, right?
Right.
Yeah, I was like, but Hulk to the picnic?
I mean, so his former, I guess, I'm going to try to figure this one out. This might hurt the brain. So it's his ex-wife's niece. So his brother-in-law must be ecstatic that he's dating.
Sure. Yeah, right.
His former brother-in-law, now father-in-law.
Right.
Must be ecstatic that Hulk is part of his life. Do you think he carries that over his sister?
I can imagine that. He'd be like, "Hey, Mark, can I start calling you Dad?" Just kidding. I'll just call you Mark.
Dad.
Dad. You never know where I'm coming from. That's fantastic. All right. I do have to ask you this question. We've got a Patrick Stevens coming up. So what's the mood in Houston? Because not only are we on, you know, we work at a network building, but there's a lot of local hosts within the building.
Yeah.
What's the local feeling in the building and in the city about, hey, listen, I don't care if all come hell or high water, we ain't playing Deshaun Watson at all.
It's the most. This is a first. It's a first.
Right. Yeah. This is really kind of unprecedented almost.
Yeah, because here's the thing. You know, the one comment that I keep hearing when I walk these halls is the NFL just needs to put him on the exempt list. Put Deshaun Watson, because the Texans have already done it.
Yeah. The Texans have been like, okay, if Tyrod Taylor's healthy, he starts. If he's not, David Mims. If David Mims can't go, we're going to have a contest among the fans to see who would like to be the starting quarterback for the game coming up on Thursday night against, who are they playing, the Panthers?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could go to your local Ralph's or 7-Eleven or whatever's big there and enter a contest to play quarterback for the Texans. You too could take a snap in an NFL game. We'll do anything then let Deshaun Watson do what he's good at. That's basically what they're saying.
I mean, prior to the season, top five quarterback in the league.
Oh, without question, right?
Without question. And yeah. Now, I mean, you've already made the announcement. We're not suiting him. He's not dressing.
Yeah.
He's still going to be on the, non-hurt disabled list or whatever it's called.
But here's my problem with this, right? And this is where, again, I'm further away from the nucleus of the story. And I get the seriousness of the accusations. I get it. But nothing has been resolved in that situation yet, right? it's not like the Texans are keeping a guy that has been declared guilty of all of this. That still has to run its course. Why won't you play him? It's what he does for a living. It's his job. Like, you'd rather not play him? For what reason?
No, that you're paying him.
You're paying him. Are you protecting him because you're hoping that the phone rings and you don't want him to get hurt? I get it. Okay, I get it.
There's this thought out there that they're still like trying to get, like, you know, we want, you know, for Deshaun Watson, we want like 6 first round picks.
Right.
You know, and you're not going to get him if you're just keeping him on the shelf.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, we understand that we understand. I get it. Like, if you can get 2 first rounds, whatever the heck they want for him, what do they officially want? Like a first and a second or something? They want a good haul, right? And teams are kind of balking at it. Right. A hurt Deshaun Watson hurts your chances of getting something for him. I do understand that. But at the same time, we're not saying he starts over Tyrod Taylor or David Mims. We're saying, in case of emergency, break glass, and glass ain't him. Like, what's behind the glass isn't him. Then what is? Then who is? Like, if Tyrod Taylor can't play and David Mims is the starting quarterback, who's the backup to him?
Well, they're most likely calling up the practice squad quarterback, Jeff Driskel.
You'd rather call up Jeff Driskel from the practice squad than say, okay, let's maybe salvage something. Look, they're 1-1.
By the way, they did cut Jeff Driskel when they had to make their final roster cuts, and then brought him back on and just put him as a practice squad member.
Lucky for you, the starting quarterback doesn't want to be here, and he's got 26 accusations of sexual harassment against him. And so, therefore, we're probably going to need you if injuries start piling up at that position, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, Davis.
Is that
Mills,
what they told him?
I mean, Davis Mills looks to be starting. Jeff Driskel will be holding the clipboard. That's how it's being projected right now.
Well, they're 1-1.
And Deshaun Watson will just be sitting at home. I don't even know if he's invited to NRG Stadium. Really not sure.
You really telling your fan base that we are more interested in getting rid of this guy for a high cost than trying to salvage or at least keep rolling along with a season that started off pretty good. I know they beat Jacksonville. I get it. They didn't beat, like, you know, San Francisco or something, but you know, they're 1-1. So is everybody else in that division right now. That there's no 2-0 team in that division.
No.
Right.
I don't, for the life of me, I don't understand it, because the NFL hasn't done anything. That's the point I keep trying to emphasize. The NFL, I mean, I know they're sitting back waiting for their investigation. So why not use his talents until the hammer drops?
Yeah.
Or is this a point that you're trying to make? Like, he has all these accusations here at the Texans. We don't stand for it. What? Meanwhile, the Cowboys are like, yeah, we'd play him in a second.
I know. It's perplexing because, look, the one thing you can't do is you know. The Lions have, we talk about the Lions. The Lions admitted we're rebuilding, but they are still trying to win football games. They're not purposely not winning football games. They tried last night to win that game. They came up short. They failed on two turns in the fourth quarter with the ball inside Green Bay territory.
Yeah.
And couldn't do anything. They're trying to actively win games. They made a comeback in the opening week against San Francisco, came up short, right? Houston should be like, look, we may not make the playoffs. We're in a transitional period, but I can't tell the 52 other people on the team that we're just not going to try. Like, you should be like, okay, we didn't want to do this, but we have to do this. Deshaun Watson has to play. Again, if you're protecting him, I understand, but the phone, it doesn't feel like the phone's ringing.
No, it's not. Right? I mean, you had your chance prior to the draft.
And you certainly did.
You had your chance prior to the season starting, but we all know NFL teams, once the season starts, like, all right, well, we got to deal with what we have underneath our roof right now.
I'm telling you, whatever they want for Deshaun Watson, if a team was willing to give him that for Deshaun, they would have already done it.
Yeah.
Right? What they're holding out for is for you to lower the price. Is for you to say, all right, we'll take a second and a sixth.
I would be curious because Tyrod Taylor is expected to miss not a significant amount of time, but a couple of weeks worth.
Yeah.
What happens if Davis Mills gets injured this week?
I know. I'm telling you.
Are you'll promote Jeff Driskel to starting quarterback? Will you just go and get another quarterback, or will you finally say, okay, Deshaun Watson, you can dress?
You'll bring in Cam Newton. God,
I wouldn't be surprised at this point.
At this point, they're like, we'll call Colin Kaepernick before we let Deshaun Watson play.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's talk some college football. The weekend that was, the weekend that is coming up. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Contributed to the Washington Post. Patrick Stevens joins us here on Wake Up Call. How are you, Patrick?
I'm well, Tony. How are you doing this morning?
Good, man. Appreciate it. Is it time for people in Clemson to panic?
It's certainly time to kind of look at that offense and wonder if it's going to get on track. It's one thing if you struggle to score with a somewhat new starting quarterback. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence started last year and is gone, but you've got DJ Uiagalelei. I always struggle with that name.
we do too.
He obviously has started a little bit last season, but it's one thing to struggle against Georgia. It's another thing to struggle against a Georgia Tech team that lost at home to Northern Illinois, which didn't even win a game last season.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, it's an interesting spot that Clemson finds itself in right now. They're 2-1, but they haven't looked good. They have an interesting game this week. At NC State, a team that has had its moments over the years and never seems to be able to quite get that breakthrough victory. And the other thing to consider is you look at the rest of the ACC at this point, and it's not like there's many opportunities for Clemson to make a good impression the rest of the way. So,
right.
in a lot of ways, they need to put up some style points and in a hurry. And maybe this is sort of like the post Deshaun Watson season, where you had Kelly Bryant start a few games. And they weren't quite right, and then eventually figured it out in late September, early October, and went all the way to the playoff anyway. I would say at this point, this looks like the weakest iteration of Clemson that we've seen in the last 7 or 8 years.
I was going to lean into that. If you are Clemson and it looks like, okay, maybe we don't have the explosiveness of years past, okay, that's fine. We can still win this conference, but what exactly is the ACC right now?
It isn't very good, I don't think. I think there's some interesting teams in there. Like, despite the opening week loss, I think North Carolina is interesting. You've got a Wake Forest that looks like the sort of team that's going to go handle its business and probably end up in that 8-4 range, which is really good for Wake Forest. They're a really solid, smart team. But you start looking at some of these teams. I mean, Florida State's a mess. They're 0-3 for the first time since 1976. Miami has looked like a disaster really the entire season, barely getting by a good App State team at home and then getting crushed by Alabama like you'd think they would, and then not being particularly competitive against Michigan State, even though that thing was close in the fourth quarter. We could run down the list at this point. Virginia Tech, Pitt, both of them lost this past weekend. Virginia Tech really kind of letting a game get away. They've been down 20, almost come back against Virginia Tech, and then just kind of frittered away at the goal line at the end. Pitt losing to Western Michigan a week after winning at Tennessee. It really feels a bit like the league has gone back to the days of, you think about those late 2000s seasons where, Virginia Tech would always be good, but there'd be nobody else that would be much better than 8-4 or 9-3. And we could be headed for something like that this year where you have a couple 9-3 or maybe a 10-2 and a 9-3 at the top, and then a whole lot of everybody beating up on each other. I can't say I'm particularly optimistic about there being chances to pick up good victories in that conference, especially on Clemson's half of the league. I mean, I think, like I said, Clemson and Wake and maybe NC State potentially, although they got hammered at Mississippi State, and that's not exactly a team that has overly distinguished itself in the early going either.
Patrick Stevens again joining us. All right, so let's go to the SEC now. And maybe the answer is both, Patrick, but what was the takeaway in that game in Gainesville between Florida and Alabama? Is Alabama a little bit more vulnerable than we think, or is Florida better than we think?
Well, I will say this. I think that the one thing you take away is that I don't think you could be much more impressive in a loss than Florida was.
Right.
I mean, maybe you could be by a little bit, but I think their stock rose simply by playing Alabama as tough as it did, and especially with the way it responded to Alabama's fast start in that game. So is Florida a little bit better than we thought? Quite possibly. Is Alabama a little more vulnerable? Maybe. You know, one of the things, we're talking about Alabama and Clemson here, and it gets to one of the things I've had kind of floating through my head here the last few weeks, is that you look at last, usually you try to draw conclusions from the season before, right? But last year was just so weird. You know, are any of the conclusions that we're realistically drawing about anybody all that valid to be carrying over to this season? And so far this year, I'm not sure that there's as much carryover as we typically would see. You know, obviously Alabama was an all-world type of team last season with its undefeated run. Is that something that has a ton of carryover, or was that a function of both them having a lot of talented left and being able to handle a weird pandemic year better than just about anybody else? I think that's open for debate. I don't think Alabama's bad by any stretch of the imagination. And I'm certainly looking forward to seeing them, you know, they play Ole Miss in a couple weeks in what should be just a delightful game, the way the Rebels are looking right now. So, but I think it's probably, like you said, it's probably a little bit of both on that Alabama-Florida front, that Alabama isn't necessarily the juggernaut that we've gotten used to, certainly last year. And Florida, I think, is probably ready to take at least another half step, if not another full step, under Dan Mullen, who, you know, from his decade or so in Starkville, proved that he most definitely knows what he's doing.
Staying with the SEC, you look at the West now, and we've seen this in years past, where early on you get a bunch of ranked teams, they start beating each other up, and that sort of goes away a little bit. But is there a surprise in that? I mean, is Arkansas ranked a surprise? Is Ole Miss as high as they are a surprise? I mean, Ole Miss is fantastic, but is there something about that division right now that you say, all right, maybe we're giving a little too much credit to these teams early in the season?
Well, I think that Arkansas is getting a lot of credit for beating Texas. And so The question there is how good is Texas? Is Texas a team that's just going to slog its way to an 8-4 type season or something like that? If that's the case, then Arkansas, you know, beating them like a drum at home, you know, that's good. I don't know if it's, you know, top 15 or top 20 good, but there's no doubt that Arkansas under Sam Pittman has gotten a whole lot better than what it was under his immediate predecessors. So, you know, that's a team that we're kind of looking at. You know, at this point, 3 weeks into a season, a team that's averaging more than 50 points a game like Ole Miss is certainly going to draw some attention. Yeah, I'm curious to see how Ole Miss does against a team that actually can play defense. And also a team that's just going to be unrelenting on offense. I mean, that was a really bad defense last season. So is that a team that has made dramatic strides? And very well may have. You know, that was a team with a new staff last year. And defensively, I think everybody was probably a little more flat-footed because of the various pandemic restrictions. So there's reason to believe that that team is better on that side of the ball. But how much better is a fair question. And I think, too, on the flip side of things, you're sitting there kind of wondering, how good is Texas A&M based on their first few weeks? I mean, defensively, they're obviously fabulous at this point. But offensively, are they good enough to keep pace with an Alabama or even an Ole Miss in that SEC West? And that's kind of open for debate at this point. You know, you kind of look at that victory at Colorado a couple weeks ago, or victory at Denver against Colorado, 10-7, I think it was. And then Colorado goes out and doesn't even get 100 yards against Minnesota this past week. So the comparisons are certainly tempting at this point to try to figure out things. But I still think there's a lot of things still to learn about all of these teams.
I get preseason rankings are for marketing, and I get all of that. But at the beginning of the season, the Pac-12 had a number of teams there. Now Oregon is looking at its own foes and going, is there any meat to this anymore? I beat Ohio State, but do I have any meat left on my schedule? Do they?
That is an interesting question, and I'm not entirely sure. I certainly think that when you look at the Pac-12 North, that there are a ton of questions there. How good is Stanford? I don't know if Stanford is particularly great, but at least they did beat USC already. They got that one in the can. I mean, USC may still be like the second or third best team in that league behind Oregon. So I think Oregon finds itself in a situation similar to Clemson in that they probably can't count on too many victories really holding up as especially valuable. But like you referenced, they at least have that victory over Ohio State in non-conference play on the road, no less. that they're hoping can hold up and retain some value. At the very least, if you're sitting there and you're Oregon and you're 12-1 and you're getting compared to a 12-1 Ohio State team at some point, that's a good situation to find yourself in when it comes time for the committee to meet in December.
Yeah, it's like Oregon's got a bunch of baseball cards that are average, but they have the Mickey Mantle rookie. So you can get the set and you get the Mickey Mantle rookie. It's like the one thing that stands out in a collection that's all right.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing too is that, you know, it has not been uncommon for the Pac-12 to make it to the end of September and look around and only have one or not even any undefeated teams. So it's not as if the collection of teams in aggregate has been all that great. Although I think at the same time you would be arguing that, you know, you would normally expect Washington to be better than what it is. You would normally expect Utah to have picked off a couple of the teams that it lost to in the last couple weeks. It certainly you would not, you know, maybe we should expect USC to be making a September coaching change. I mean, it's happened before, or at least an early season change anyway. So if you're Oregon, you probably don't have as much margin for error as you'd like. And the best thing that you can do is just go out and post convincing victory after convincing victory and hope that you don't have an off week down the road.
All right, one final question. This is all speculation. I'm just asking you your best guess. Who gets the USC job? Does James Franklin leave Penn State after what we saw from the whiteout crowd in a game against Auburn?
Well, you know, I think that if you're James Franklin, you've got to at least be somewhat intrigued by that possibility. At the same time, you know, when you start thinking about USC, and I wrote about this last week a little bit, kind of in relation to them and Texas, you know, how good a job really is USC? And when you go and look at what they've been able to do over the years, yes, you've got that really remarkable heart of the Pete Carroll era scenario, but you know, they won in the 1980s. They won 78 games. They won 68 in the 1990s. And they won 86 in the teens. You know, I believe that run from 02 to 08 when they went 82-9 is the exception rather than the rule. And now the good thing, if you're any coach, especially one that's in the Big Ten East like James Franklin is, that you look at USC and you say, well, there's not an Ohio State sitting out there, and to a lesser extent a Michigan. And certainly you don't have the depth of a division that not only suddenly now has Michigan State playing well again, but Indiana, Rutgers, and even Maryland have all looked more than competent in the early going this season. So I don't know what they're going to do. They obviously have plenty of time to figure it out, but I'm not sure that job is as good as everybody would like you to believe it is. That said, it's still Southern Cal. They've still won a national title in the last 20 years, and they're going to have plenty of people knocking on the door. My guess is that after having stayed in the family the last few times, that's a school that's probably going to look on the outside to ultimately land its next coach.
Patrick Stevens, contributor at the Washington Post, talking college football. Thank you so much for coming on. Hope to get you on again. Thank you, my friend.
Awesome. Take care.
You got it. That's good stuff. I want to elaborate on what he talked about with that USC job. I think there's a thing that is starting to come around for that gig that he just touched on. We'll get to that coming up next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Ready for a new home? Rocket can. All right, thanks to Patrick Stevens. I think he touched on something that's interesting. It's, you know, there was a period of time, and, you know, not that long ago, really, for a long period of time, where there were the up top of the pyramid jobs that you would, no matter how good you had it, wherever you were, you would just leave to go to that job. Notre Dame, USC, Texas, Ohio State, Penn State even, but that job, you know, Joe Paterno had that for years and years and years. But there was this like pyramid of jobs where you just couldn't turn it down, right? You wouldn't turn it down. And I wonder if it's different because he's right, right? There's a new world order coming in place now. Yes, it's Los Angeles. Yes, the recruiting's good. Yes, it's the Pac-12, et cetera, and it's got tradition. But sometimes you can look at your current situation and go, you know, I think what I've got here is is just as good, even if it's not considered one of the top jobs in the country. I do think in the end, like if you're James Franklin, you would consider it, right? Penn State may be one of the traditional college football programs. And I think, you know, getting that job usually means you could stay at that place for as long as they'll have you. But I also think that you could look and say, oh, you know what? That's rather interesting. I think I might want that. You know, when Urban Meyer left Florida, for example, and he was going to get back into coaching, he wasn't going to get back into coaching at Colorado State, right? I mean, he was going to get back at one of the premier programs. He wasn't going to just take any job to get back into it, right? He was going to wait for one of the top premier jobs to open up. And when Ohio State became available, that's when he went for it. And I think USC has got that, still has that pull. But I do think they have to go outside the USC tent, right? I think they have to go find somebody and take a chance on one of the young up-and-coming coaches. Because, you know, I know that there are people who get recycled all the time. It's kind of the way coaching works. But there are some really smart young people. I think Luke Fickle, for example, at Cincinnati is a guy you would really bring in to talk to him about what he would do at a program like USC. Right? I think, again, I keep mentioning Billy Napier at Louisiana, and I hope his stock doesn't fall too much. I remember when I was at Air Force, Troy Calhoun is still the head coach at the Air Force Falcons. His stock was flying through the roof. And he was up for the Tennessee job. He was up for the Broncos job in the NFL. And you don't hear his name very often because sometimes when the iron is very, 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 very hot, use it. And he didn't use it. So, not, you know, it's his alma mater. He's at Air Force. He's happy there. He'll be there happy for there for till retirement. But sometimes when your iron is really going, when your name is popular, when you are the hot name, take advantage of it to get a job like that. Hour 3 coming up, top 5, bottom 5.